Hey Zach, how you doing? Not hearing you. There we go.
Shane, I'm doing well. How are you?
Good, thanks. Good, thanks. We can jump in. We have I don't know, I haven't heard from Robin, so I don't know if she'll be joining us or not. And then also with the other two, I haven't heard from them yet. So we can jump in if you want. Check in, see how you're doing, see how you are since our last call, what things you implemented and what fresh things are happening for you.
So I did not send you an email, and I apologize for not giving you the appropriate groundwork and framework to it. Reason being, actually, last night I sat down and I was drafting some thoughts, and I thought everything I have in front of me right now, I understand how to approach with a level of framework, decency, and detail. Some using your assets, some using it. I didn't have any net new challenges that I was feeling underprepared for. That said, I always look forward to joining and listening to other people's challenges because it helps me think about things differently.
Okay.
And it's been a hell of a week, if I can say that, because in
Yeah.
the last week coming out of where I was, I was negotiating some of my job role as what I was feeling like was something I was being voluntold to do and being upsold as like an expansion of my authority. And now that I'm seeing it more on paper, it is absolutely an expansion of my authority, and I'm going through some of the emotional changes at this time of, how am I going to scale to meet the demand that's now being put on me from my peers, and some of the quick things that obviously imposter syndrome flares up, but I know how to deal with those kind of things. The reason imposter syndrome really flares up to me typically is because the areas that I'm scaling into and leading are areas sometimes that I don't know. And I worry about how people would feel about that. And I know that I don't need to, right? And that's not really what's important to me, but it doesn't stop that feeling. And it doesn't stop how I react to it. A fly in here. It doesn't stop how I react to it. My learning curve through different levels of consulting, through enterprise architecture levels, through manager levels, up into even like lower levels of being a director, was when I got something new that I didn't know or wasn't an expert at, I'd go be baby Einstein overnight, and I would consume what I needed to do to grow.
Yeah.
That's just not realistic in leadership. And that's been a really big change for me that that's not really what you need to do. And you need to trust your teams and get the right levels of expectation in place, et cetera. Right. And so like, I feel confident with that, but at the same time, it doesn't change my behavior. Like when I'm getting all these things, it's like, yeah, give me these hundreds of people, in this country, and I'll go do this, and give me these people over here, and I'll go do that. But in the back of my mind, after I get off the call and it starts to settle in, it's like, well, I need to figure out what these people are actually doing. And then I started to revert to my old ways of, well, maybe I'll sit down this weekend, I'll do 100 hours and I'll figure this out. I grew up a farmer, and I've just, like the 100 hour weeks never scared me. And now that I do tech and stuff like that, it's never registered to me that like this is now my job. Like, I should be working 40 hours a week. So like that's never scared me to go do that. But it becomes extremely unscalable at the level that I'm at.
Yeah, it's also it misunderstands what you've actually been hired to do,
That's right. Yeah.
and I think that's the biggest thing that people who are you're going through this, so there's actually quite a lot of research on this around what's called developmental theory. There's a developmental model of leadership and consciousness, and there is a very clear, discrete level of consciousness that's measurable. That is, and level doesn't mean better or worse. It means it's measured by complexity, the capacity to handle complexity. And there's something called a skill-centric wave of development. And skill-centric is all about perfecting, excellence. There's a high level of elitism. So this is engineers, doctors, lawyers, accountants, finance people. That's their mastery. And they go out and they become better and better and better and better at a craft. When some, this is really common, when people are really, really good at that craft, people go, great, we're going to put you in charge of 100 or 50 or three other people with that craft. The moment that happens, you enter what's called a self-determining wave of consciousness. Most people don't know that's what happens to them. They just think it's, okay, I'm doing kind of the same job and I'm managing people, and that's something I got to figure out and adjudicate. The reality is you are entering a completely new role in the world. And the skills that you made you really effective at that one level are only useful in credibility. They're not actually useful often in the task you have before you, which is increasingly governing and managing an emotional system, which has almost nothing in common with software development or engineering or being a physician or anything. And so, you know, that's the reason you're in this program, is that you're continuing to deepen your understanding of what are the tools, what are the new polarities that emerge that, you know, as a skill-centric person who's doing development in software, or if you're an engineer or whatever, you have polarities you're managing. You know, you're building things that have built-in polarities. All of those polarities effectively go away when you become a manager of those things, and a whole new set of polarities get installed, and you start going, okay, I'm navigating a whole new thing. Language patterns have to change. Pacing has to change. Expectations change. One of the biggest challenges for people who go from skill-centric to self-determining, and there are three others after that, by the way, but this is just the one you're on right now. The biggest challenge is to go from expecting in a skill-centric stage that an A is 99% or higher. And when you get into the management role, an A is now 90% or higher because you can't control all these people's performance. And so you are dropping your standards necessarily so that you can delegate tasks. And it means that even though you could do it 10 times faster and you could do it at a 99 to 100% level, the people you are leading may not be able to. And your task is to develop a tolerance to allow for 90% to be an A. There may be some tasks where 90% is still not good enough, but there are. I would challenge you to be thinking about, what are those things that I expect out there that actually probably could be done at a 90%? And while it's not my preference and it's not my liking, the reality is it's probably good enough. And that's just one path for you as you think about, you know, like, oh, I'm going to do a 100-hour week. Great. Go do a 100-hour week. Make sure you're doing 100 hours on the one thing nobody else can do except you. And make sure that what you're, when I say that, I don't mean like, well, you're a better coder than everybody else, so you should go do that. No, what I'm saying is, given your role, you have a vantage point that others don't have, and you have a span of control that others don't have. And so you have the ability to see things others can't see. And it is your responsibility to invest your time, effort, and energy in the things that only you can do. And that's the hardest part of transitioning into that. And you've done it before. I'm not saying it's your first time doing this, by the way. I know you've done this before. I'm just alerting you to that pattern you've already lived through. It's happening again at a slightly higher, more complex level.
And that's why, like, I always like listening to everybody else's stuff is too, but like, sometimes I don't know my question. And I actually did sit down last night and tried to formulate my question. I'm like, I don't know if I want that to be my question for the week, but I could probably explain to them where I'm at. You know what Perfect. I mean? But that's exactly it. You know, so if I'm going to my accent, if I'm going to burn 100 hours a week on something, which is normal for me, then it should be on the one thing that I can do. And it seems so obvious when it's said out loud, but it's not obvious when you get caught up in the whirlwind.
Sure,
and of course. I'm really stuck on that right now because, yeah, I was managing a lot of people directly and then a lot of people indirectly. When I say a lot, like there was 20 people or so directly, 60 people semi-directly, and then hundreds up to 300 people indirectly. And now what I'm switching into is a much different role of people that I manage, versus some consultants now into actual just engineers, like in what they do and what they care about. There's huge polarity in there and what they want to hear from me and the accuracy of which they want to hear from me and how they, I don't want to use the word crucify, but if I say one word that's like, you know, I get the version wrong on some jar file library that they got in some product, they're just like, this guy is not my leader. I don't subscribe to this guy. He doesn't know what the hell he's talking about. Right. And so that, you know, that puts me, you know, anxious. It makes me, gives me some angst sometimes about like, well, then I do need to know more so I can appeal to this audience on some of these key points. And, but that brings me back to some of the things we talked about in the past is like, make sure you hit the things you need to hit well, at the times you need to hit it right in your pitching, in your speech. That did help me quite a bit for some audiences I need to address. And I think actually next week, let me check my calendar. I think next week I can't attend, or the following week. I'll have to. So the following week, the week of the 4th, I won't be able to attend. I'll be flying back and forth. I have to host a conference in Vegas.
No problem at all.
You know, some of those tactics have absolutely helped me so far. I've been going through the modules, not through any course or order, just, you know, as I find them applicable.
Awesome.
I have had some issues that I'll mention here that through some of these transitions, I'm focused a lot on the accountability and responsibility with some other roles. But it's hard to get a very large organization to recognize any type of change, even when it's announced.
Let me just check in with one thing before I want to dig into this, but I want to just follow up with you on one other thing, which is, how did the conversation go with the person that was burning up all your time?
Oh, that was a big success. Yeah, I appreciate you following up on that. That was the one thing I was going to write you in either case. I had drafted an email on it saying this went well. Formed a strong partnership with them. They're largely misunderstood. Their behaviors and their intents and their passion. I don't think they've had much of a champion or strong proponent in their career helping them get investments in the past. We were able to recognize different values in each other. We did burn more time, you know, before it got better. There was a series of misunderstandings, right? I think we got, you know, an additional 20 hours in of late nights. But when we got there, it was much better. She was representing me on multiple calls in a way that was promoting me versus making kind of like half-handed comments about like, oh, we got a new boss. And it definitely changed her mentality. I think it helped her mentally let go of her previous leader.
Good.
And
those are important things.
Yeah, I can see her and I getting a lot of work done together now, just, you know, having worked through that. And I did use a lot of the tactics and language that I was able to find out on the website, as well as what you gave me in our last call.
Good. So just as a kind of a blueprint or a rule of thumb, and you'll have to kind of know this going forward, because this obviously isn't the last person you're going to encounter that this is going to be an issue. Just know that getting alignment, the definition of getting alignment, is a series of conversations marked by misunderstanding. That's it. That's what getting alignment is. And so the more you just know that and expect it and that it's normal, it allows you to tolerate those series of conversations that are marked by misunderstanding. And then eventually the misunderstanding falls away and the alignment kicks in, and then it's fine. And the more leaders understand that that's what alignment is, they enter the first round of misunderstandings just fine. Like, oh, another misunderstanding. That's part of alignment. Oh, another round of misunderstanding. Oh, another round of misunderstandings, until we get to, oh, when you say that word, you mean this. When I say that word, I mean this. Oh, now we're getting, and then you start to align. And so just for you to know that going into any major challenge you're facing with somebody where you're feeling like, gosh, this is not working right, That's what it is.
In our firm, we had, because I like what you're saying, we had misdiagnosed the value of alignment by blending it with enablement.
Oh, yeah. Two totally different
perspective. And I think we're going through that with our transformation to the cloud, needing to break them apart differently. You know, the cost of services in cloud and some customers wanting to move to cloud by themselves and things like that. We can say we enable you for cloud, but then there's a huge gap between when we've aligned on what they need to be enabled on self-enablement for it. So it's helping us mature internally on some different topics as well by breaking them apart. But we're only at the stage right now of breaking alignment and enablement apart because we've mastered enablement, but now we're starting to break out alignment. I think people are realizing that it's a totally different beast than what we've, you know, sugarcoated it as before, but we've never really done it well.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I got a note here actually while we're on the call that Robin will be joining us in about 10 minutes. She's coming in a little late. So we can kind of dig into anything else you want to talk about, any other questions you have or anything you're kind of thinking about. You know, in your case, it may not be that we're looking at kind of challenges you're trying to solve. It may be that I'm helping you anticipate what will be coming your way also. So however you want to use the next few minutes.
Yeah. So like my thing is with everything I'm given, I will likely be a VP in my organization over the course of give it 9 months or 15 months. And this is a very large organization where people have really struggled to pierce through that veil.
Yeah.
Long story, I've been promoted almost 6 or 9 months I've been promoted in my company 9 or 12 times, something like that, depending on if you don't like actual promotions or just job title changes. So, you know, I'm getting close to the top there. And that's also why I had joined a lot of this is because it's about getting some foresight in it, knowing I don't have all the skills. Being aware is way different than actually applying it.
Yes.
Some cases I hit a home run and I'll apply it right on a call. And I see a couple of leaders like, yeah, we got the right guy in the right situation. And other times I get dragged into the weeds and I'm just right in there fighting with them. Right.
Yeah.
I get off the call and I just hate myself. I hate the feeling.
And well, that's called normal. Like this is the other thing about this is part of the reason that the transition from skill-centric to self-determining is so difficult because skill-centric people are extremely hard on themselves and they have become accustomed to absolute excellence in everything they did and do. When you move to self-determining, everything becomes much more functional. And because it's more about functionality and humanity, it's much more about complex emotional systems and people. You start to realize quickly, there is no such thing as perfection. It's mostly art. And it's the art of like, there's no such thing as messing up. It's just choices and consequences. And so what's interesting is the language you just used is applying the language that would come from a skill-centric stage to a self-determining challenge, which is like, I get off the call and I realize that I did that wrong and I shouldn't have been that way and I should have been this way. And it's like, yeah, by the time you're like a CEO, that's like 3 times a day. You're going to be like, oh, shouldn't have done that way. Oh, that was a mistake. Should have gone left there. Whoa, another mistake. And so the higher you get, the more you have to develop tolerance for like, it's an art. I mean, I do this stuff for a living. When I'm coaching senior leaders, CEOs of very complex systems, we're constantly laughing at how many mistakes we make because it's just humans are complex beings. And while there are patterns that I know and can detect, they're still unpredictable. And so every word I come up with, I'm like, well, in every other context, that word worked. And then in this one situation, it had the opposite effect. And it's like, no problem. That's the art. And so we just keep working at it. So I think that's my other kind of just posture encouragement to you is start getting really good at seeing your role in leadership as human art. And that, you know, yeah, you painted a little extra red over here today. No problem. Paint over it green tomorrow. It's fine. You know, and as long as you're kind of reasonably attuned to the emotional wake that you're creating, there are very few things that are unsalvageable. you know, very few mistakes that you can't just go back and say, hey, I'd like a redo, and you know, I'd like a do-over in that conversation. I didn't come off the way that I had hoped, and I'd like a chance to do-over. Is that something you can give me? Very, very rarely does that not happen. You know, the only time that it becomes a real problem is if you are just consistently, repeatedly running your boat through the no wake zone, destroying boats and houses over time. Yeah, at a certain point, they're like, we don't want to have a do-over for you. You need to be gone. But that's just not your personality. So I don't really worry about that for you.
Yeah.
So another question I have for you is, did you ever have a conversation with your boss, the one that you felt was like, are they using this for their gain instead of mine? We talked about, you know, assuming it is for their gain. Now the question is it for your gain as well? How did you net out on that? Did you decide something? Did you have a conversation? Where are you with that?
Well, I did approach him on, you know, trying to clarify, you know, I think what you're saying is you want me to remain accountable for this. And I think you're also one of my biggest proponents for trying to get me accountability over here on X, Y, and Z. How do we get some more people in here to, so I can delegate the responsibility to make sure your teams are are still going to function correctly. I'll still manage, I'll still lead them. But we need to get some managers in over here. Long story short, it made our relationship better on several aspects, and it did make him just draw a quick line for me. The first thing he told me is like, if you still want to be part of my leadership team, you need to figure out if you got one foot in the door or not. Right. And that's on you. I think you need this to be successful for what you need to do. But you need to let me know where you're at. And so, you know, I sat down at night and I figured out, like, I do think I need what I'm getting from these other teams that I would own in his organization to change the way our entire organization functions, from building the product to shipping the product, blah, blah, blah. I own it end to end, all of the design, the build, the marketing, also the shipping and delivery, as well as the consultancy. I own all of it. And I was like, well, I got the whole value chain now. If anything ever goes wrong, it's me. I can control all of the adoption. This is a pretty powerful thing that no one in my company has ever had the opportunity to have before. And it's all on me for the success or screw up of it. And if anything, he's put me in the driver's seat to make it. He's not asking me for anything more. He's asking for me not to give up the leadership of his teams. And he's asking me to make sure that when we get it into production, I'm working with his teams for the operational handover. So I'm not putting more debt into his buckets. Like, we do things fast, then, you know, more debt over there. So I kind of said, I thought about it. And I thought, he's not being unreasonable. And actually, you know, I've sent you some notes that he's kind of a bit of a lunatic, right? This guy is just like madman style,
yeah,
hardcore. And it's helped my wife and I to a better place. My wife's never really truly cared for him based off of just his approach to life, that I'm switching out of his organization and I'll just have a different relationship with him. And actually today, you know, the guy's still in my corner fighting for me on a lot of things. We ended up on another call, letting go on an employee that I didn't feel was doing well in the company, consistently challenged me. And he backs me 100%, even against like his best friend in the company, another leader, whatever. We're talking about, like, you know, thousands and thousands of employees, you know, but he's going to go against his best friend on one of his senior managers and say, we got to get rid of her. She's nonsense, causing a lot of drama. And so I think in a lot of ways it cut through a lot of the noise. Maybe if anything, it helped elevate in his eyes how he needs to see me and treat me, because I'm going to help him more in the long run as well, more from a pawn to a rook or something.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Good. Awesome. Okay. That's great to hear. Now let me go back to what I just said about the art and becoming the human artist. How does that resonate with you? How does that land? Do you see that? Does it make sense? You want to push back?
Well, the first thing I felt was a sigh of relief, because this guy is, when I first took this role to work for this guy, the people that put me in touch with him knew him as well. And they said, look, this is going to be creative destruction. Either you two are going to build something beautiful together, or you're going to kill each other, because we're very similar, you know, work 100 plus hours a week and, very opinionated. and he had made me his right-hand man and blah, blah, blah. Right. And so it's either going to work out perfect or it's going to be just a disaster. And I did it for 2.5, 3 years. We made a lot of tremendous progress. I have nothing but gratitude for the opportunities he's given me. I don't know how I would have moved out of this role if something like this wouldn't have happened. Now I get a chance with some hindsight to sit down with it. So I had a dinner with my wife and we talked about, I thought this is probably one of the best things because he's promoted me out of his team in a way that I'm still going to help his organization. And he's actually setting me up to be one of his key business partners in the future. And I'm out from underneath his thumb, so to speak. Right. And so I actually, for the first time in a couple of years, I felt a lift of pressure. Now there's a whole new set of things I need to perform. Obviously I'm in these calls for a reason, but it's a new and exciting challenge as compared to that, the pressure that I had before, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it makes perfect sense. Good. Okay. Well, that's awesome. I'm glad to hear that. Well, you're still, I think, just continuing that. Now, the other piece of work that I think would be really good for you to do in a kind of more proactive way is, we've talked about the Enneagram, right?
Yes.
Do you know your type?
Well, I don't know it on the Enneagram. I know it on the DISC profile. And I know that there's different outcomes, but I don't
totally
know.
Totally different. Completely right? Different. Yeah. Here's what I'd request you do, if you can find some time. Watch the bonus on the Enneagram and start to become, this really is that the Enneagram in particular is one of the biggest differentiators that I find between leaders who are incredibly high functioning and those that struggle. That and polarity management are like the two biggest determiners. Well, I'd say the third thing is the ability to be at a self-determining stage of consciousness. Those are the three big things. Where you are on the Enneagram, which is more type, where you are developmentally, and then how you understand polarities and how you manage them. That is going to be increasingly required as you get higher in this organization, where you're confronting more complexity and a greater number of employees. Those are the things that we would work on. And so I want to get you familiar with the Enneagram because there's a lot of rich depth. I've gone into organizations, this has happened multiple times, where I'll have gone into a senior team with a CEO going, my team is a mess. There's infighting, there's problems, there's illegalities, we have to fire someone, people are just at each other's throats, we're not getting along at all. I can come in and within about 3 to 4 weeks, I will have them operating in a completely new way just by doing the Enneagram with them. Just by giving them some simple rules, some simple understanding. And what happens is it injects humor, it injects self-awareness, and it injects compassion. And when people who are at high levels of leadership start to connect to compassion, humor, and self-awareness, they start functioning way better. And so I'm not detecting team problems here for you. I'm just helping you anticipate something that I know is going to be really helpful for you. So I'd recommend watch the bonus, get familiar with the various types. And then if you want, you and I can have a little conversation about which one you think you are. Or I can send you, you can look at any number of a dozen links on websites that are free Enneagram inventories. They're not all perfectly accurate. No Enneagram inventory is, because what makes the Enneagram unique and distinct from all other personality profiles is that you have three traditions that personality profiling have come from. You have the empirical tradition, which is late 19th century research-based preference and behavior inventories. The Berkman, Myers-Briggs, StrengthsFinder, DISC. These are all empirical 19th century research-based, grounded in preference and behavior. Then you have what's called the esoteric tradition, which would be like numerology and astrology based on birth dates and numbers and things like that. Most people in the West don't accept that, but it's got a much, much longer history and tradition. And then you have another stream, which is called the wisdom tradition. And the wisdom tradition is the archetype of that. There are several, but there's the blood types that one of the great ancient Greek philosophers developed that actually still to this day, it talks about body humors and all this stuff, and it's actually quite accurate. But the one that is most well known is the Enneagram, and it was carried on by in secret oral tradition for thousands of years across multiple kinds of religious orders that they were not religious. They were wisdom teachers, but they were kind of sponsored by various religions. So the desert fathers of the ancient church, and then the Muslim Sufis, and then went into South America and then traveled up into North America. But what it does different from everybody else is that it doesn't look at your preferences and behaviors. It looks at the motivation, why you behave the way you do. And when you understand why you behave the way you do, you can begin to make major evolution in yourself. Whereas just a static boxes of preferences and behaviors, it's just kind of a thing. It's telling you what you already kind of know. Like, oh, you're introverted. Yeah, I kind of already knew that. Oh, you're really analytical. Uh-huh. Yeah, kind of knew that also. You really like having respectful conversations. Uh-huh. Yeah, pretty much knew it. You're very direct. I already knew that. You know, so like there's a lot of like, I prefer this and I behave this way and I kind of knew it already and now I have a name for it. But it's not meaningfully transformational. Whereas when you go in the Enneagram and you look at an 8, 3, and a 1, all three of those types will have similar preferences and behaviors, but they have diametrically opposed reasons for why they behave the way they do. And when you make contact with that, you begin to transcend your type. And that's a really powerful thing to have. So I just wanted to kind of flag that for you.
Yeah, I appreciate it, Shane. Thank you. I will absolutely go out there and I'll take a look at it over the weekend. Self-awareness is a big thing for me, obviously. Injecting humor and passion are always sometimes a struggle. Used to not be, but it does get to be a challenge at times. So those are some interesting things that if it does that, it's kind of an interesting tool.
Yeah, it is for sure. Well, take a look at it next week. I'll dig in a bit more on how and why you can make use of it. And we can assess kind of what type you are. Robin, welcome.
Hey.
How are you?
I'm good. Just a little busy today.
Yeah. Thanks for joining. Yeah. So we got to spend some time with Zach here. And so if you want to jump in, it's your turn to engage and talk if you'd like. If there's anything that's on your mind, want to check in to see how you're doing. Mostly I'd like to first check in and just see how did it go with the conversations you needed to have with those stakeholders that we kind of talked about last week.
Yeah, I think the good news is I think the challenge that I was bringing to them, they already kind of knew that was a problem. And so what was great was I was dealing with people who are living in reality. So that was nice. Because, you know, sometimes there might be an over expectation or just like a total misalignment on like what somebody should or should not be doing. So no. They acknowledged that they didn't really have anybody in their organization stepping up to take ownership or play the right role. And so first we were on the same page there, but we still had the resource challenge. So I said, okay, well, if we're going to operate this way, here's what I'm thinking. We have some options. And it was very successful, I would say, in being able to get us to make sure we had the same understanding and then move forward in a way that is better and is known that is temporary while they find the right person to take ownership. So yeah, I think the tactic worked really well.
Thanks. Okay, good, awesome. Yeah. And what else is on your mind today? What else is going on?
So something that's been on my mind this over the last week or so is, there's the time management element of our roles and kind of making sure you can look at all the things that need to be done and where should I be focusing my time versus where should I be delegating and empowering somebody on my team to take it and run with it. And I've been kind of doing that work of coming up with the lists of things. And I'm finding myself feeling a little gun shy in making the asks or creating the opportunities to delegate some of the work that needs to be done. And I find myself being gun shy because I'm also aware that these people that I'm delegating, or what I would like to delegate things to, are actually already over capacity. And it's almost like I'm feeling bad that I'm delegating, but I can't take it on and it's not the thing that I should be focused on. So I'm just trying to manage, like, how can I manage the ask, or how can I create that environment where, even though it's kind of it's above and beyond what they have capacity for, or what is maybe very explicitly, you know, laid out in their job description, how can I feel better about doing it, but also do it in a way that's going to make them contribute effectively? I'm struggling with some of that.
Yeah, sure. Great questions. So the first thing I would say is, it doesn't sound like you're unclear about what the issues are. Like, you know what they are, right? What you need to delegate is super clear to you. This I shouldn't be doing. This other person should be doing it. Yeah.
For the most part. Yeah. I'm like teetering on a couple, but I'd say 80%. Yeah.
Great. So the next thing is, a way to help manage when somebody is oversubscribed and you're going to channel more things through limited bandwidth is serial processing rather than parallel processing. And what that means is you would elongate timelines to respect the fact that they're already at max bandwidth. So what you might think about doing is having the conversation in a way that acknowledges, hey, I recognize that you're at this point, you're pretty well maxed out in your bandwidth. And I respect that and want to be sensitive to it. But it's really clear this is something that has to be done. And it's really clear that this is someone in your role that would need to do it. And given that, what I'd like to suggest is that here's kind of what my expectation is in terms of when that can happen, or how often it can happen, or how quickly it can happen, or whatever metric you can use to kind of set new expectations. That can be a really helpful way to have that conversation, so it doesn't just feel like they're getting stuck with something. You might even enter a negotiation with them about time frame and bandwidth. Or you might say, I'd like you to do this for this amount of time, and then let's have a check-in in 90 days. And let's just see how you're feeling, how you're doing, how you're holding up. And let's see if there's anything we need to do to adjust it. And so you'd want to put in your calendar for 90 days from now, you're going to have a check-in. But what everything I've just said is designed to respect the emotional reaction that they might have when they're given something that they're already feeling like they're carrying the full weight already. And you're doing effectively two things. One is you're acknowledging that reality. Two is you're sticking by your guns, which you need to, which is you're going to delegate. And three is you're actually going to give them a feeling of agency. And here's how you're giving that feeling of agency. You're either letting them weigh in on how the time might function, and or you're guaranteeing that within 90 days, you're going to check in to see how they're holding up. So it's a whole lot easier to be like, I need you to run this marathon, and I need you to add a 50-pound bag to your back. And by the way, I don't know when the end of the marathon is. I don't even know which mile you're at. Psychologically, that is way harder than going, you have two more miles. After two more miles of carrying this bag, I'm going to check in with you, see how your knees are doing, how your back's doing, how your cardio's doing, and we'll assess. If you're in really dire straits, we'll have to rethink this.
Yeah, I think that's something I can do.
I mean, without knowing more details, right? So I'm speaking in the abstract. So if you want to dig into more detailed expression of that, I might be able to help you fine tune that.
Yeah, I guess I was just also wondering if there were kind of like mental models of like what's reasonable, I guess I could say. And I'm kind of coming up with that myself right now. So I'm thinking to myself, like when I'm looking at the list of like, what should I delegate? And then there's the other part is like, what can I delegate just given the turnaround time that's required for some of the items? Like I was asking myself, you know, I don't think it's fair for me to come to somebody and have them have this done for me tomorrow, right? Like I am asking them today, like that's not fair. And I feel like that's kind of a disrespectful move in some respects, if it's not
I'm not convinced of that, assuming you have authority over them. Are these people reporting directly to you?
I do. But that's the thing is I would like for those individuals to feel as if there's mutual respect. Okay. And for me, I don't know if that's maybe just because for me, when I'm asked to drop everything that I'm doing and do this thing for my boss, unless I know it has like a direct customer impact or it's an ask from the CEO, I will always kind of feel like, well, that was kind of shitty of you, you know, and I can get on board with it and I can do it, but it doesn't feel like respect when that stuff happens. But maybe I need to change my mindset about that.
I got it. Yeah. So I get it now. You're kind of projecting a little bit of your own experience onto the person below you, which Correct. Is sometimes a reasonable and fair thing to do.
But is it not in this instance? Because I need to be told what it's not.
It depends. This is what I'm going to walk through a couple of ideas here. Okay. So the first thing that I would say is module 3, video, I'm looking at it now here. Oh yeah, video 7 is one of the most critical things that all managers need to know how to do. And this is your job as a leader is to provide effectively 3 things well. One is you need to have the target, what winning looks like. That needs to be clearly defined. You need to be able to provide prioritization, what things matter more than the other thing. And you need to be able to provide sequencing, which thing needs to happen in what order, right? Sequencing and priority are not the same thing. And so and there are other things too, but I'm just going to start with these 3 and that video will elucidate more of this, but so make sure you watch that. But what that will do is you actually have this ability now to say, I'm actually providing you with help. Your manager may not have done that for you, but a really good manager will know, I know you're working on these 10 things and I'm going to add an 11th thing. Or I know you're working on 5 things and I'm going to add a 6th thing. When I add that 6th thing, I know that this is going to have to get rearranged and reconfigured. And what you're accountable for will have to adjust also, because I understand how bandwidth works. And so what that means is you've got these 5 things. I'm going to add a 6th. That 6th is actually now first. And what that means is I expect number 4 is going to become last. And here are the implications of that. If you can get that to me by then and this to me by here, that's what I need. And the last thing you can do is you can link that to what winning looks like. So for example, you said to me, well, if they're coming to me and they're asking me for something that's in the best interest of a customer, then I can do it. Well, that's them linking what you're doing to what winning looks like. And if winning is changed and they're like, hey, look, we know that you're accountable and everything is linked to customer success. But actually right now for a window of time, customer success is going to take a backseat and we've got to do X and we need you to manage to that goalpost instead. Here's your new prioritization and here's your new sequencing. It's a whole lot easier to do. You're just like, okay, as long as I'm not accountable for that thing, I'll set it aside and I'll go to work on this for you.
Right.
But it's when they don't know how to make those ecological adjustments that people feel really put upon, disrespected, and there's no awareness of like human limitations. Like at a certain point, I can't carry more.
Yeah.
And unless you want to pay me more or you want to help me not get a divorce, I can't do more or whatever. Right. So I think that's the thing for you to be looking at is module 3, video 7, thinking through those things. And how you would have that conversation is you would need to create a new ecology for them. And that's what I alluded to in the beginning of the conversation is I was just giving you kind of broad samples of how to create a new management ecology.
No, that's fair. And I think that, I think I can do that. it was just that whole sentiment around, yeah, I probably need to be able to give people at least a couple of days to be able to rearrange whatever they need to do. But in some ways, I think spelling out, like, I know that this is normally your priority, but I'm asking for this short period of time that we prioritize this.
Yep.
If some other things are going to take a back seat, like, just make us aware and we'll find coverage or something like that. Yeah. I think that helps me feel better. It just, I wanted to honor the human, right, in this ask, because
that's the way you do it. And you just say, hey, I got your back on these things. Don't worry about it. You won't be held accountable. But this is now priority number one. Most people are used to that, and they want that from a
lot. I would think that I would want that. So yeah, I agree. Yeah. I think I was struggling with how to do it in the way that still felt good to me, because I didn't want to be like, this is your priority now.
That should be how it's going to be for you. Like, if you say to me, I'm going to give them an extra thing and I expect nothing else to change and everything holds the same, then I would tell you, you're not understanding human limitation. Mm-hmm. The fact that you can come in and say, I'm actually going to help you trade out one thing for another for a period of time, you should do it with great authority and clarity, and you shouldn't feel bad about it at all. And if they have a hard time with it, that's their problem, not yours.
Right.
Because that's how the organism is set up.
Or they can make me aware of something that I
am
not considering. Like, I'm down with that too. It's just, yeah.
So that's, yeah, you can just say, you could say, this is what I think the priority needs to be. Here are the things that I think have taken a back seat. Do you foresee any problems with that? Anything you need to make me aware? It's that simple.
Yeah. And I feel like this similar model can, and may, a way of thinking about it, also works probably with peers too.
For sure. Peers is a little more delicate, but not dramatically. I mean, I would just say it's okay for you to be directive and clearer. What one of the things that governs employee engagement is clarity from their direct supervisor. Everybody across every organization and system craves clarity.
Clarity, yeah.
When you create ambiguity, and that happens when we're trying to be really nice, being super kind is actually a great way to cloud everything. When you're like, well, you could do this or you could do that. I don't want to be to this. And now you've like wasted more time. I'm less clear now. Thanks for being nice, but I know what the truth is.
Yeah.
So I'd rather you just be direct and truthful with me and give me the priority and the sequence. Tell me what winning is. Tell me what the priorities, tell me what the sequence is, and I'll push back if I need to. But if you're like, I understand your concern, don't worry about that. I'll take care of that. Or you won't be held accountable for that. Those are the only two things people feel is, I'm held accountable. I want to do a good job. You are getting in the way of me doing a good job. And that's why the release valves are always, you're no longer accountable, or that is a delay, or whatever. You're just looking for one of those release valves that cause that emotional experience of that team member to feel like they're not being pressed in a way that they can't handle it.
Yeah. And then the second thing that I know is my issue related to this topic is I'm trying to separate myself from being good at providing clarity on the target and being overly prescriptive on how you get to that target. Because that's a part, that's the other part where it's like, if I'm really empowering somebody, then I can't be too prescriptive. And am I also kind of trying to just tell them, do this, this, and this, because that's what I know and believe should get done, but maybe I'm missing something. So I guess I'm trying to balance between like articulating the target versus being prescriptive about how they reach that target.
Yeah, for sure. Watch also then video 8 and 9, the following videos as well. Here's the reality. You may need to prescribe exactly how to do something, because if you already know what winning will look like, it is a disservice to them to make it seem like it's not, and they need to be empowered. What you're really saying is just guess at what I think is going to be right. And I'm going to be happy if you hit that guest target. And I don't want to tell you what the target is because, I don't want to feel like you're disempowered. No, if you know that's the target, That's the sequence. That's the priority. And there are other things, by the way. If you already know the answers to those things, give them the answers.
Okay.
You don't need them guessing. It's not disempowering to say to somebody, I need us to have this many, in a sales context, I need this many sales. These are the four KPIs we're going to measure. I want this one to be benchmark here, this one to be benchmark here, and this one to be benchmark here. If any of those things aren't working, we know where the leak is. And I want us to fix this one first and then that one. Ready, go. People are like, sweet, paint by numbers. I'm off. Versus like, hey, let's try to improve our sales and I want you guys to kind of be on your own.
Yeah, so I think this is useful. I guess, can we walk through a quick example?
Yes, absolutely.
So that I get the balance, because I think in the context that you shared, like I'm here for that. I'm here for that, like what you said. I think where I'm, so for example, we keep having production issues from a specific vendor. And I need to create a view of how many issues there are, how often they're happening, and what time suck it is taking from our teams. For the purpose of being able to escalate that in our organization and theirs. So I know that's what we need, but then there's more than just the issues. There's other elements of vendor management that I believe are relevant to reporting as a part of performance managing a vendor. But I don't want to go through the exercise. Like, I personally don't want to go through the exercise of like, okay, what are all the things that we should be measuring against this vendor? Like, the vendor manager should own coming up with those, because they know the SLA, like they know the service level agreements, they know the vendor, they know all of this stuff. I'm looking for them to be able to create more of a packaged delivery of what this escalation looks like. I know that I need the production issues called out and very specifically, laid out. I don't know all the other pieces and parts of what we should be holding the vendor accountable for. And so I need actually them to own that part. And I have a prescriptive way of which I would go about doing it, but I don't want to detail all of that out. I want them to be able to take ownership of that part, but I know I need these specific things. So I guess maybe I'm answering my own question. I can be clear about knowing what I need and knowing that there's more, and the expectation is that they come up with the more part.
Yeah. And if you already know, for example, that the more you want in the form of a spreadsheet with four columns that are, weighted averages, tell them that. If you know that the more is you just want an email with bullet points, tell them that. Like, be specific in the exact format they need to give it to you.
The information.
If you already know how you want that information given to you, be specific in that. It's not helpful for them to be like, I sent you an email. And you're like, an email? I need a spreadsheet. I didn't know you needed a spreadsheet, right? So in that case, you're saying, or you might say, I need you to develop a matrix of criterion. And then we're going to use that to assess whatever. And I want to see that matrix before you populate it, because I want to make sure you're measuring the right things. And so you want to install whatever steps you need to install. Again, I think this is also if this is not a repeating thing and this is not an area of mastery for them, you need to provide guidance. For example, I do a lot of strategic work and I do a lot of strategic consulting. I never assume that even people at the highest levels have any idea how to do a strategic plan.
Yeah.
So I will give them, here are the empty buckets I need you to fill. Section one, here's a sample. Here's the question you're answering. Section two, here's a sample. Here's the question you're answering. You need to go populate this. It needs to be in this form. You need to answer these questions in this order. If you don't answer this one first, you won't be able to answer this. So that's what I give them. I'll do that to a really senior CEO at a big organization. Still won't know how to do it. And I will guide them on how to exactly do that. Again, I don't know the content. I know nothing about their Apple company. I just know the form that allows the conversation to happen and the agreements to be formed. And so if you already know, like, you're a smart person and you know how to do this and you know what's going to help you, make sure you give them that format at least.
Yeah.
And if you don't, if you have no opinion whatsoever, that's totally fine too. Then just be okay with whatever form it comes in.
You're right.
What's the sigh?
The sigh is just it's partially an internal battle, right? Because there's a part of me that's like, Robin, maybe you need to get over it, because maybe you should stop having certain expectations too. Because that means that if I have certain expectations and I have to go lay them all out then. Right. And so that's still work. Work on my part. Yes, and so it's kind of that balance of like, well, Robin, like, what are the things that you should let go of your expectations for? Because all of the things on your delegate list can't have that level of detail. So that's more like what the sigh is for, is like,
yeah, got it. Okay.
That means that I need to pick the couple that are really important.
Perfect.
And focus. And then the others, if they're less important, then they have a lot more agency around the how, and I should be less prescriptive and just let that shit go. So it's more of a me thing than anything.
I my observation of you, there are two things that I would push a little bit on you around, which is, don't apologize for expecting and directing. You don't need to feel bad about expecting and directing. And then the second thing is, make sure that you're not wasting your time on what you're expecting and directing. So you really want to ask the question. So if I got the data in that way, how much of a difference would it make to me if I got the data in this other way? And if it's like 3%, skip it. If it's 40%, do it, because it's going to make your life a whole lot easier. So just ask yourself, like, how much will that make my life harder or easier if I ask for it in this way? And you're like, minor, like, what do I care? It's easy enough for me. Okay, then don't waste your time on it.
Yeah.
And it's okay for you to have expectations and directions, and that's fine. You know, there's nothing wrong with that. Just like I'm telling you, like, when you have to delegate to someone, be unapologetic in your need to delegate.
Yeah, I think it can be unapologetic if I'm still honoring the human. And I think setting it up in the way that we talked about, because the reason why I feel bad is because it's missing something in that equation, which does not honor the human. And I know it's going to have a longer term impact to me than the short term need being met. So that's why I was struggling with it. But that was really helpful. I appreciate that. And I know it's like tactical, but it is actually a day-to-day kind of big deal. So
no, nothing's too tactical. When I get into this kind of work with people, it literally is, we're punching in on a single word you're going to use in one conversation that makes a very big difference in the emotional wake of a system, which impacts productivity and impacts engagement and impacts everything. So these are not overly tactical questions. And by the way, I would have to have these conversations with very senior level CEOs to say, you're about to have this conversation with your C-suite executive and you need to make sure you don't use this word. So everything you're learning in the stuff that we're doing applies at the highest levels.
Thanks. I do have to drop, but I really do appreciate the quick insert of knowledge for today. I appreciate that.
Glad to do it. That's what we're here for. Have a great day. Thanks, Robin. Zach, we can close out as well. Do you have anything else? Any follow-up?
No. Same. I have to drop as well.
All right. Have a great day. We'll see you next week. Bye. Maybe.